Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 195. It's forecaster season. We mentioned on the last show, we're going to have a couple forecaster episodes coming your direction here. We did this at least last year, if not the last 2 years. It's been really fun getting different writers on the show, getting their perspectives on what they cover, what they cover also outside of the forecaster, and maybe more with Baseball HQ and fantasy in general, which is fun to get some more voices on the show as we don't get a ton of outside guests on the Bubba and the Bloom podcast. Before we get to that, you can find me on the Twitter at BDEntrix Podcast, at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, at Ryan BHQ. Ryan, how we doing, my friend?
I'm relieved. I played scheduler duty just like you do for your shows, Bubba. And trust me, it's not always easy, but excited for these shows. Yeah, this is the third year we've done kind of two forecaster centric episodes. The forecaster, obviously, for folks that have renewing orders, they got their PDFs on Thanksgiving, which is always a nice little turkey treat. But then the hard copy of the book is out, I think shipping out sometime this week of December. Well, the week of usually doesn't start with on a Thursday, but December 12th. They'll be out soon. I don't know. But excited for this trio of writers on the forecaster. Two of the three, Chris and Tom, are first-time guests to the show. So let's see how they do.
Speaking of the one of the first-time guests of the show, he will be joining us now. You can find him on Twitter at @KO_reporter. He does work over at Baseball HQ and, of course, in the forecaster. Chris Olson, how we doing, my friend?
Doing great. Good to see you guys.
Yes, usually we're in person when we get to interact. Now we get to talk over the streams.
Last time we saw Chris was at the golf course. Chris, my favorite picture of the Bubba and the Bloom Invitational at Arizona was that picture when my dad gave you a
vintage golf ball, shall we say.
It's a perfect way to say it.
Yeah, I think Francis we met used it to win the 1917 U.S. Open, I believe. So, it was nice.
Yeah, good old Raj. Raj always coming through with the out-of-nowhere entertainment that we love so much.
Absolutely.
All right, well, we'll get right into it here because we're going to get everybody in and out and try to keep this in an orderly fashion, as orderly as we can on Bubba and the Bloom. So, Chris, first question I have for you here. Like I mentioned at the beginning, not all of you guys are just forecaster writers. You do other content for HQ. So besides writing for the forecast, what do you do over at Baseball HQ? What other articles do you participate in?
Yeah. So my duties have sort of shifted as time has gone on, but currently I am a Playing Time Today analyst for three teams in the AL East, my beloved Boston Red Sox, the Evil Empire, the Yankees, and the always interesting Tampa Bay Rays. And so, coming up with those little news nuggets and analysis as news breaks. There's a little bit of news just yesterday in Boston, which was delightful to write about.
Yes, just a little bit of news over there. After a couple days of the world is ending in Boston, now it's like, okay, some good stuff with Crochet coming to town. Let's just hope they sign him long term. Otherwise, there'll be more the world is ending stuff coming on as well.
Well, no, I mean, the world is ending stuff has already started again. It's been 12 hours. Come on, we can't be happy here for too long.
That's true. It must be nice being a big market like that. At least that actually does something. Like, I'm technically big market, but they don't do much often.
Yeah, just wait till your Giants sign Corbin Burns, which I know you're dreading, Bubba, as we age this episode. But
I'm dreading $300 million. That's all I'm saying. I'm just dreading that price tag. Chris, another question I got for you here. How long have you been with HQ and writing on the forecaster more specifically? Because it is fun in recent years. We've had I think last year we had someone, we had someone on that's been there from the beginning writing, and it's been pretty wild seeing the different levels to it. How long have you been contributing to the forecaster?
Well, I knew this question was coming, so I went up to my right that you can't see. I have my forecaster library, and I couldn't really remember when I started writing for the forecaster, and I found myself in the 2012 one, so that means 14 years I've been doing this, which is that was more than I thought. It's a really fun annual exercise. It's a true labor of love.
Awesome. Yes. Yeah, no, it's pretty sweet. And I love watching Ryan and all these guys continue to grow. And we'll have Corbin on a later show. He's been doing this for a while, so it's been fun to say. But what do you got for him, Ryan?
No, I was just gonna say I think I started 2016 or 17, and I'm still probably one of the newer writers on the Forecaster. We'll later this episode, we'll talk with Brandon, who brought on a first timer, but it's, I want to say an esteemed club, but it's tough.
I always hold my breath, you know, towards the end of October, just hoping I'll get asked back and that I haven't ticked off the wrong people and, you know, that they'll actually invite me back. And I'm always excited when that comes.
You're good. You are, I will candidly say, both you and you are one of the, you and Alan DeLeonardis,
yes,
are the two, from a humor standpoint, on these boxes, just consistently right on point. So I'm sure we'll probably talk about some of the, I've got one in mind. I know who that is, yes, Chris, so we'll talk about it in a little bit. But you and Alan, who we had on last year, you guys.
I read some of Alan's on air last year, and I almost couldn't finish reading them because it was I was just dead. Like, because this show is usually when I really first get into the player boxes, is getting, like, when you guys tell me which ones you like the most and all these things, I'll start reading them and looking at stuff. And Alan was out of this world on some of those. And I can only imagine, like, Ryan, from an editing standpoint, it's a breath of fresh air to have a Chris or an Alan bringing you something besides just the repetitive, like, hey, here's the stats type thing. So that's probably pretty nice.
Yeah, well, I mean, Alan's hard to keep up with, but if I'm even in his league, I'll take that as a compliment.
You're up there.
At least you didn't have to share a PT tomorrow column with him last year and have to compete with that every week. That was fun.
It's a different type of creativity. Just put it that way.
We'll move on. Chris, so when we get to, like, so outside of the humor, we'll get to the humor part in a minute. I'm always fascinated here because I have my own process when you get it, the somewhat daunting task of, like, you get this Excel file with seven players and all kinds of stats in it and, like, seven blank boxes that you need to fill out. Like, what is your general process for a given player when you have an empty box? What are you looking at? What's kind of your go-to? I don't want to say just like go-to stats, but like what is your general process for how you want to at least like put together the material for a box?
So what I try to do, and as you know, Ryan, we get the marching orders from Brent, and you know it's very serious. You have to go back and reread the whole encyclopedia of analytics, and then there's the instructions, and there's sort of like this checklist for batters and a checklist for hitters of the metrics that you want to make sure you look at. So I open up like a Google Doc and I just throw that list of like boxes to check just to make sure I'm not missing any of the metrics. And then I have that, it's basically a scratch pad, but it's a Google Doc where I just kind of dump everything I'm finding about a player onto, just a sheet of paper and just sort of go, okay, here's what the metrics say. Here's the injuries the guy had from the news sites. I'll peek at a Savant page. I'll peek at Fangraphs or whatever, just pull from everywhere and kind of just try to get the guy's general vibe, right? Just kind of like, what's the main kind of angle we're trying to take? I mean, the funny thing about writing for the Forecaster is, I write a lot from my other gigs that I have in my life. And, when I have like a 1500 word count article for a newspaper, I always give my editor like 2000 and then she yells at me that it's too long. So she would be stunned to learn that I, work within the confines of a little Excel box.
You actually stay on the three lines that we're given.
And if you talk to Brandon, he'll tell you that sometimes I don't. I'm like, oh, geez, I forgot, or whatever. But but anyway, so I just dump everything into a big old scratch pad, and then I, kind of stare at it for a while and try to come up with, like I say, sort of like the general gist and the direction that the box is going to go, because you can't fit everything that you're finding about a guy in there. And then just kind of come up with, as we'll probably talk about, sometimes it's okay, this is a serious, this guy's going to be drafted in every league, so I have to give some serious analysis and, give a decent take on the guy, up, down, otherwise. And then there's the other guys that fall into another category of, he's not going to be drafted in too many leagues. Now we can maybe have a little bit of fun, sort of at his expense, but I try not to be too mean, but every once in a while you can't resist. And if any of those players ever read any of my boxes that are a little on the lighter side, I would point out that whenever I make fun of you, you'll probably have your best season ever, and I'll regret that I called you irrelevant. I know I've did that with Buck Farmer. Like he be
I was
the
going to
next
say,
year he's
yep.
the next year he became like a part-time closer, and then there was a guy in the Orioles too that we all thought was a bum, and then became like a closer. And so if I make fun of you, it probably means your career is probably is pointing in the right direction.
That's
Yeah, it
always the
never
like
fails.
go ahead, Bubba. Go ahead.
I was saying it never fails. But yeah, continue.
Yeah. That's always a thing, like with yeah, when to mix in the humor, I think is big. And I find the same way. I'm nowhere near as at you or Allen's level, but I always find, yeah, it's the more like irrelevant players, we have a little bit more leeway to just kind of play with it and see where it goes. Do you have like a so what I like when I'm writing boxes, it's hard it's you're writing you're right by the end of the forecaster writing process, you've written up so many players, it's easy to fall into like a general cadence. And that's
Right.
been one of my biggest challenges writing boxes is I typically do is if there's an injury, I throw that there at the beginning. My first sentence is something about what they did the previous year. My next sentence is skills analysis. And then my last sentence is like what it means for 25. Do you have like a, and I try to veer from that if I can, but that's how I at least started. Do you have like a similar kind of like template for actually putting the words in the box once you've kind of looked at all the stats and the data?
Well, I mean, I'm an artist, Ryan, so I can't be, confined with
And I am not.
But yeah, I mean, to some degree, that's sort of what the exercise is, right? So it's like sort of this balance of being creative, but also, giving people information in the form that they expect it. So, I hear what you're saying, but on the other hand, it's also kind of like, there is a forecaster voice that you're trying to, and it is pretty wild that like, our names appear in that tiny little type at the bottom of the page. That's way too small, and I deserve more credit and bigger billing. But if you read the book front to back, like, and if you're not paying attention to that, it does sort of like sound like it's written by one person as opposed to like a team of dozens of us, which is kind of cool. So I do try to at least have that in mind of like it needs to sound like the forecaster. It needs to, sound like our founding father, Ron Chandler, or whatever, and and go from there. But so yeah, I hear what you're saying, but I wouldn't feel bad about sort of being a little formulaic because I think there is definitely a forecaster rhythm and stuff that we all try to stick to some degree.
And what I've noticed too, at least in my experience, is I tend to lean more on the side of formulaic. And then I will notice once the book is published, there have been some, tweaks and things
Right,
that
right, right.
the higher ups do that kind of make it go in a little bit vary direction. Do you, this wasn't on the rundown, so I'm putting you on the spot a little bit. Are you ever surprised? How often are you surprised that you have your little name on the bottom, but the box, the text in the box isn't exactly what you wrote?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, yeah, I mean, but then again, there's like if they changed the one guy that we're going to talk about later, I would have been super bummed. But other than that, I just feel like no, that's fine, and they usually make it better. So I don't. I don't think that happens too often. A couple times a year maybe, but for the most part, it mostly resembles what I wrote. There was one guy that I looked at as I was prepping to talk to you guys about that. I was like, oh, I totally did not write that. I forget who it was, but it's like, oh, that's it, and it might have even been a guy who got into the book late or something like that. I don't know how much they do that in terms of swapping guys out for guys that are more relevant or whatever, but I was like, oh, I don't even remember looking at this guy's, stats and metrics and stuff like that. So maybe he was a late swap of one name for the other.
Well, it's nice to hear that I'm not the only one that gets things changed after you submit them and go, wow, how did that just happen? Even Ryan, he's on the front of the book, Chris. He gets things changed. So, yeah, that's pretty positive. Just rough number, if you can remember. If not, how many boxes did you do this season?
Well, it's pretty easy to remember the page count. So I think I did four of each. I think four batters and four pitchers, if I'm Not mistaken. So not a ton,
More than me.
Yeah. So so that well, is it.
All right, then what was your favorite box that you wrote, out of curiosity?
Well, yeah, Ryan knows the answer to this one. It's it was Bryce Wilson. Rotation anchor Bryce Wilson. You know, moment of inspiration with Bryce. I just you know, he's one of those guys that of the category we talked about, as I sort of like looked at the whole landscape of it, especially, you know, you have the XERA column, you know, and you look down Bryce's and you see that's really not somebody who, unless like in 2013 when he had a little bit of hit and strand rate luck and whatever, that you would want on your team. So, you know, you look at it and you go, well, you know, chances are no one's running into their draft, you know, dying to draft Bryce Wilson or debating whether to pick him or someone else in a round that matters. So we had a little fun with that one.
Since I shamefully rap Notorious B.I.G. lyrics a week or so ago on our episode,
You will be performing it.
I will just be reading. I will not be in full performance.
There might be some tone behind this, Ryan. I want to hear some rhythm.
And I won't. I know he's a first time guest, so we won't make Chris do this. But I do the Bryce Wilson box was just hilarious. So Bryce obviously rhymes with ice. So, and again, Bryce Wilson, like Chris said, is one of those obscure players where you're just like, let's let it loose. So Bryce Wilson goes, all right, stop. Collaborate and listen. Bryce is back, but bats he ain't missing. Something grabs a hold of me tightly. An XERA trend that's fairly unsightly. Will it ever stop? Yo, I don't know. But lack out of a standout skill says no. If ERA's your problem, he won't solve it. Lefties, fly balls will likely devolve it. Bryce, baby.
Word to your mother, Ryan.
So good.
I forgot that one.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Yeah. That's so you good. Can do that for Bryce Wilson, but if you, I think if you did you that can. For like Bryce Miller,
yeah, probably.
I don't know.
Yeah, you'd at least have to change the lyrics, but bit, you know, but there's some analysis in there. You know, there's you know, it's not completely devoid of fantasy content.
It was good.
I liked it. It was good.
Yeah, and you know, it's hopefully, you know, that song will be stuck in everyone's head the rest of the day after they read that page, which is, you know, part of the fun.
Perfect.
All right. Toughest box for you. I know there's some for me where I just stare at a guy in his body and I don't know what to say. I guess, is there a particular box is there like a particular type of player where you're just like, what do I say?
Well, the couple of guys that came to mind about on this question are guys that, like, you know, they you know, just like, until you look at the numbers, you think, oh, that's kind of a sexy player. And, you know, I'm sure when I look at the box, I'm going to see there something there to get excited about. And then you look and you're like, huh, not really seeing it. So like the two guys that fall in that category for me were Jose Miranda and Gavin Williams. Actually, you know, like out in Arizona, I felt like I was hearing Gavin Williams' name every, you know, every few minutes about, oh, you know, breakout and, you know, all the talent in the world and so forth and so on. And, you know, I get the box and I'm looking at it and I'm like, you know, if this guy's breaking out, it's not really apparent in what he's doing. And I want to say nice things about him because he's a young guy, and you know that 1 year that you don't say nice things about him, it's going to be that magical year when you know, he puts it all together and grows by leaps and bounds. And, you know, certainly that could happen. In fact, I think I even incorporated a reference to that in the box, but like, I think you're doing a disservice to people with the analysis if you sort of project somebody or suggest that somebody's going to do something that they haven't yet shown that they're capable of doing. So that was, and, you know, and Miranda was, you know, is the type of guy where, you know, he had the back injuries and so forth, and really seems like it sapped his power. And so, you know, could he have an off season where he gets totally healthy and then the promise that we saw a couple of years ago all of a sudden, you know, reemerges or whatever? You know, maybe, but like it's hard to find that anywhere in what you're looking at from last year. So those are the guys that came to mind as being kind of tricky.
Yeah, Gavin Williams is a very popular name, but I was reading your write-up as you were talking about him, and yeah, he said he could break out, but don't pay retail. So I definitely agree with you on that one, and it kind of leads me on. My next point is, when we do any type of research for players, especially preseason, trying to figure out what we're going to do come draft day and whatnot, there's some players that will stand out to us like, wow, I didn't realize this. This is an intriguing situation, one might say. So are there any players after you wrote all these boxes that now you're higher on than you originally would have thought you would have been?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, obviously everyone's sort of already high on this guy, but like, I think I'm even a little higher, and it was Jackson Merrill. And because I looked at, you know, the stats were kind of flat first half to second half in terms of power. But underneath it, you know, he was hitting the ball harder and the launch angle's better and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, you have the little XHR, column where, you know, that actually from one half to the next, you know, actually does show more growth than actually showed up in the, you know, in the stats from last year. So, you know, I think we tagged him. I forget. I'm trying to scroll to it now, but I think I tagged him with an upside of 35 dingers or something like that.
Yep.
And, you know, so that sort of surprised me of like, you know, yes, obviously super talented young player, gets you a little bit of power, a little bit of speed, you know, good plate skills, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, just the fact that there might be more power there was kind of cool to notice.
I always, that was interesting to me that like typically after a breakout season, no matter how young, old, whatever these guys are, like typically the forecaster line, and I mean that, and just sheer regression is like, all right, they don't expect the same thing again. It was surprising to me, and it makes sense that you would even do an upside further, like after a breakout season. So that.
Real quick for like the novices out there like myself that don't write these like you guys have for years, who gets to put the ups or downs or all those kind of predictions? Because not every player has one per se, but like you have Jackson Merrill had up. I remember it was a year or two ago, I think it was Brian Rudd had a Cy Young prediction for like a Snell or something, and it worked. So I'll let Chris have the floor. Like, who gets to decide? Did you do that, Chris, or does the power to bees do that later?
So yeah, I mean, we get the first crack at it, but I will also say to the earlier point about things that get edited and whatnot, you know, sometimes you'll tag a guy with an up and it'll get spiked further down the road or whatever. So I, you know, another guy that I was enthusiastic on was Brian Wu, but I think I wanted to tag him with like a, you know, Cy Young candidate type of thing, and that seems to have gotten the kibosh upstream of me, so that's fine. But yeah, no, we will suggest them in the first instance, but I imagine it also sometimes works in the other direction too, where maybe an editor will slap one on there after we've done the write-up too.
That's what I'll find too, is, and kind of going back to what we were saying about things that change after we edit it, but what I find with mine, the most thing that gets changed is I won't put an up or a downside in there, and then, you know, higher up the chain, it gets thrown in there, so it gets added. But yeah, basically anyone along the, from writing to editing to final approval, can throw it in there. It's just speculative. It's if everything breaks right, this could happen, or, you know, obviously on the downside as well. All right, last question for you, Chris. The guy that you are lower on than you thought after writing their forecaster box.
Well, he actually came up during your live taping of your podcast, where I got like kudos for, I forget what the Bloom board exactly was, but it was like sort of a, you know, guess the guy. And it was, the answer was Cedric Mullins. I don't know if you remember what the gist of that
Bloom board was. I think it was ADP fall, or I could be wrong. But yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, so yeah. And what surprised me about him was that just how kind of phony the power is there, and, or, you know, how you know, there's a downside risk there with the power. He seems to have learned just how to, selectively turn on some balls, specifically at Camden, and get it over the wall, but probably not all the way to Utah Street in Baltimore. But doesn't really do it anywhere else, and just doesn't really hit the ball with a lot of authority. So I think he actually did get a down of 10 homers. He'll still run and all that kind of stuff. I'm not saying he's going to be a bust, but one of the things that I said was that if he leaves Baltimore, which it doesn't appear like he will be, but if he left Baltimore, you might want to even question the power a little bit further.
For sure. Well, a lot of fun stuff there. Look forward to digging in more. You said 8 pages in total, which is a good chunk of the book. Don't discredit yourself. You said you didn't do that much. That's a heck of a
56 players, seven players.
I did the quick math real quick. That's 56 players. That takes some time. So
it does take some time.
I'll probably make a broken record with everybody we talk about on this, but I tell Ryan all the time, I am thoroughly shocked on how you guys can keep so much information in such a small amount, because when I do preview stuff for other books, it's hard for me to keep like a paragraph and have everything I want in it. So what you guys can do is pretty darn impressive to me. So Chris, we appreciate you joining us, and we'll have to get to chat with you again sometime.
Yeah, no, appreciate you having me on. Appreciate all you do. I'm a first time guest, but a long time listener, and really enjoy everything that you do.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it, Chris. Alrighty, everybody, we are going to move on to guest number 2 on our show. Ryan, any thoughts on what we just heard from Chris before we head on to the next round here?
No, refreshing to get his takes. And yeah, if you are a forecaster reader, you can do that control F in the PDF. Just type in Chris Olson. Yep. You can do it for any writer.
That's what I did. That's what I had them all up in 2 seconds. They wrote, so. A caveman figured it out, folks.
Hey, if Bubba can figure it out. But barrier of entry is low on finding player pages.
Yeah, I knew exactly who he was talking about. It's real simple, actually. So if I can do it, I think even Raj might be able to do it. And we're going to be going somewhere.
Let's yeah, we'll see.
All right, we'll bring in our second guest here. Again, 3 guests on the show for us on this one, contributors of the show. And this will be another first-timer joining us this evening. Honestly, didn't know this was his real name. I just know his Twitter personality, so this is fun for me here. When we were talking about planning all this, so I'm really looking forward to chatting with him. You can find him on Twitter at Baseball Stringer. Tom Mulhall will be joining the show. Tom, how are we doing,
guys? How are you? Can you hear me?
Yep, doing great.
Good. I haven't screwed up yet.
I'll give me time.
Hey, there's time.
There's time.
We'll try and throw you off anyways and get you to do it. But no, thanks for coming on, man.
I'm glad to be here.
All right. We'll get you started with the easy ones here. And just so people can get to know you a little more, kind of give us your background with baseball in general, Baseball HQ, stuff like that.
I started my first season. I had a rookie by the name of Ellis Burks on my first team.
Ooh, nice.
1987. I then started subscribing to a guy named Ron Chandler, who had a monthly newsletter. And I was pretty much in on the ground floor. My subscriber number was, I think, 87.
Oh, man.
So I've been at it a while. I've been writing about East Asian baseball for the Baseball Forecaster since 2008. And Todd Zola is resurrecting the Fantasy Index magazine, and I've been writing for him for about 2 weeks. Nice. So I've been at it a while.
I just want a quick question before Ryan goes with the next one here. What, and maybe we will get to this, we'll obviously get to this more later. What got you focused on like the East Asia side of things when digging into writing baseball content?
Bubba, I used to be in what I guess we could call a He-Man league. It was an AL only, 15 teams.
Oof.
With 15 reserves.
Good Lord.
So as you can imagine, you do the draft, then, which is what, 15 times 15, you got 144 players are gone. Then you start 15 teams drafting 15 reserves. By that 14th and 15th round, you are really scrambling.
Yeah.
And I saw a little paragraph, I think it was in the Sporting News, might have been in the Daily. You guys remember the Daily, which was a great daily sports newspaper that Frank DeFord tried to launch. And it said there were these two guys in Japan who were thinking about coming over, Ichiro Suzuki and Hideki Matsui, who he referred to as the Babe Ruth of Japan. So I wrote the names down, and I got to my draft, and I, with my last pick in the 15th round, I took Ichiro Suzuki by accident. I wanted to take Matsui, the Babe Ruth of Japan, but that worked out. That worked out pretty well. Yeah, he came over in 2001, and then, you know, Ron Chandler was always very ahead of the curve. He was one of the first on the internet, and he had a subscriber for him. And I put a little note in there about this guy. I think it's going to be pretty good. And I mentioned Matsui, and the next year somebody said, hey, what was the name of that second guy again? So I started every year posting a little article about players. And in 2007, Ron contacted me and asked me to start writing a column for the Baseball Forecaster. And I said, Ron, I'm going to have to be really honest with you. All I do is I read a lot of articles about these guys. I compile it, and I give my best guess. Mm-hmm. And there's this long pause, and Ron says, what do you think the rest of us are doing?
100%.
So nice. I'm glad to be hobnobbing here with my fellow educated guessers.
Yes.
I've been doing it ever since. A lot of fun.
And just to give Tom some street cred, I pulled up this little nugget. This is from the 2016 Baseball Forecaster.
2016.
This was written in 2015. Tom writes this. So this is what 9 years ago. This player is known as the Fastball Prince and would be a top MLB pitching prospect if he were not playing in Japan. Excellent 98 mile an hour fastball, usual compliment, supporting pitchers, splitter, curve. He has not looked overmatched when pitching against MLB players in exhibition games. This player added attraction is of being a pitcher. He can also hit and play outfield. Several MLB scouts are closely following his progress, and any MLB team would love to sign the 21-year-old future star. Possible MLB ETA 2018, and that is Shohei Ohtani, well before anyone knew who Shohei Ohtani was. So Tom, I gotta pump you up and congratulate you on that one.
What happened to that guy? Did he ever pan out?
He disappeared in the World Series. That's all
disappeared,
I know.
Disappeared. Never saw him again. Yeah, I heard, pretty lucky.
Signed with the Dodgers with a bunch of deferred money.
They deferred everything. So we'll talk about him in like 30 years and figure it all out.
Yeah. Well, when you're talking about favorite boxes, that's probably mine right there. When you hit one like that, they become your favorites. I had, and I've been pretty lucky over the years. I had Yu Darvish a couple of years early, and you know, you have a lot of misses, obviously, because you're really guessing, and there's you know, it's tough to do sometimes.
Yeah. All right. So anyone who has this year's edition of the Forecaster, so Tom has kind of a running entry in the Encyclopedia Fanalytics page 48, but then really where you kind of do your annual write-ups is towards the end of the book. This year it's page 235, and it's kind of not to simplify things, but it's basically a kind of a paragraph on any potential meaningful, not just 2025, but keeper dynasty player that is in East Asia. So what, just from a process standpoint, Tom, like what's your process for kind of writing your section of the Forecaster?
Well, I listened to Chris Olsen and I guess I'm going to have to start stepping it up. I'm way more shoot from the hip than you guys are.
You and me both, Tom. You and me both.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a stat guy. I'm not an analytic guy. I am, you know, that I follow it, but I'm not good at doing that work. So I'll tell you what, let's do this. Let's start with the posting system because my process, the research, everything comes out of that posting system. which is a, you know, it's a mystery, and I get it. It's complicated. I followed it for years, but let's go back to 1994.
Whew.
Yeah. Hideo Nomo notices that in his contract, his reserve clause only covers Japanese teams. And it also gives him the right to retire. So Nomo announces his retirement. And they throw him a big party and retire his number. And then 3 months later, he comes out of retirement, signs with the Dodgers. You remember the fat toad, Irabu, for the Yankees?
Irabu.
So he jumps in 97. He uses a loophole. And then in 98, Alfonso Soriano, who was playing in Japan, also jumped through a loophole. Well, that was it for the Japanese owners, who make our owners look like the most benevolent philanthropists on earth. And in 1998, the Nippon Professional Baseball League, NPB, and Bud Selig signed this new posting agreement. And I know this is going to shock you, but something that Bud Selig was involved with is not exactly good for the players.
No.
Good for business, good for the owners. I know, I'm breaking your heart here. And basically, it restricts their free agency to 9 years. You are under contract in one way or another with your team for 9 years. Now, actually, after 8 years, you can attain what's called domestic free agency. You can jump to another Japanese team, but you don't get international free agency until the ninth season. You being the player, have no say-so over that. Now, usually in order to make the jump, you have to be posted. Usually they would do that in the penultimate year, the year before you became a free agent. That's when they would post the player. It made sense. You were going to lose your contract rights and your control over it. Now, some of the teams are doing it sooner for mostly financial reasons. Some of the teams won't do it at all. Never. Almost never. If you see the Giants or the Hawks post a player, it's like Fujinami. They want to get rid of him, and they're hoping some sucker comes along, like Oakland, and takes it. And they did. The good news, if there is any good news, is that under the modified agreement, you can now negotiate with several teams. It used to be that you could only negotiate with one team. They paid a fee, and you can only negotiate with them. Now you're allowed to negotiate with multiple teams, and the Japanese teams gets a percentage on a sliding scale. It doesn't apply to amateurs. It only applies if you sign with a Japanese team or a Korean team. So there's nothing that prevents MLB from signing Japanese high school players. They just don't do it. And it shocks me that they don't. I just read that the Angels just last month got their first full-time scout in Japan.
Jeez.
Now.
Interesting. So if I heard you right, an MLB team can sign a Japanese player out of
high school. Correct. Okay. And some of the younger players are using that as a loophole. One of them signed with a college team over here.
I saw that. He's like the future Babe Ruth or so they were calling him.
That's it. The new Japanese Babe Ruth.
Yeah.
And so he signed with a college team over here. What is really happening now is that their young stars are pretty much fed up. And they have one opportunity. When they come out of high school, when they sign with a Japanese team and they're drafted, the Japanese league has a very unusual rule. Four or five teams can draft the same guy in round one. All of them can draft the same guy. And you can negotiate with any of those teams.
Oh, goodness.
And that has given these young stars a little bit of leverage, which is what I suspect Sasaki has done. Okay, and he had an opt-out clause allowing him to be posted or forcing them to post him sooner. They're going to make no money off of Sasaki because of the MLB collective bargaining restricts what a 25-year-old international player can sign for.
Yeah.
So he's looking at maybe a $5 million deal. And they're going to get 20% of that for their posting fee. If he'd waited just two more years, he's 23. If they had waited just two more years till he's 25, I mean, what did Yamamoto get? $300 million?
Something like that, yeah.
Now, I'm not a math major, but 20% of $300 million is more than 20% of $5
million. Yes, okay. Yes.
So my guess is pretty strong that he had more than a handshake deal, which I think Ohtani had. He was also posted early. I think he had it in his contract that after 3 years, they had to post it, or 4 years, and they did. So
okay. That's
pretty much. Now, the good news is, with the posting system, from my viewpoint, I don't have to follow 200 players.
Yeah, true.
I only had to follow players once they hit 5 or 6 years. Now I've got to be a little bit more research. So it helps to keep down the number that I have to follow. I can't keep up with 200 major league players and 200 Japanese players and 100 Korean players. You know, I could barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning, which I think was a bagel. So that's the posting system in a nutshell. It affects my process because, you know, again, it cuts down on who I have to follow. What I do is very niche. I'm probably of very little interest to your redraft leagues, except I have a little bit better handle on these players than somebody else. If you're in these keeper leagues and you can draft a guy for next year, like a prospect, some of these guys are interesting if they're coming over soon, but you can't carry a dead spot forever. Like in my keeper league, we can carry 10 reserves. I can carry one of these guys in my league. But I know a lot of these leagues only have 4 or 5 reserves. You really can't waste you can't have a blank bullet in that, you only got 5 chambers. So, but for your dynasty guys, for your dynasty players who are listed, and you stink at prospect, figured out, or the guys that you're in the league with are really good at it, and you're always a day late and a dollar short, this is a great place for you to catch up. If you had done nothing more 5 or 6 years ago, other than draft their MVP or their, they call it the Sawamura Award, which is kind of like our Cy Young, but not really. You could have had Sugano and Yamamoto. You could have had Ohtani. You could have had this Murakama who's coming over next year. You could have had Maeda. You could have really stocked up your farm system with these guys who are, for the most part, major league ready. They're older, they're more experienced, and they're usually ready to roll when they get there. So my process is, I told Ryan earlier, I'm not going to give you the full quote from Boogie Nights, but I'm a simple man. Okay. I'm a simple man. I'm not quite legal pad simple, but I'm close. I look for ability, opportunity, and desire. Are they good? Are they have the opportunity to come over? Are they near the end of their contract? And do they want to come over? It used to be very difficult to tell, and it's less so now. And it used to be you had to read between the lines of somebody who wanted to come over because it was considered bad form to publicly state, I want to play in the major leagues. And you had to look for somebody who said, I want to compete against the best, something like that. I remember years ago, I had two great catchers. One was named Abe, and one was named Joe Jimmy. And I read that Abe wanted to become a manager, which means he doesn't want to tick off the powers to be. But then I read Joe Jimmy was learning English. Now, why would he learn English? Because he wanted to come over to the league. And he did. He played for Seattle, played pretty well. And you could have had him for $2 if you drafted him at the end of the draft the year before. So that's kind of what I learned. My process is I have certain people I follow, either used to be on the internet, now on Twitter. And those people give me enough information that when they say something about a player, this is so simple, I just print it out and I put it in a file. And at the end of the year, I look at what I've got on those guys And then I write up my column based on that. So it's I mean, Bubba, it's so easy, even you could do it.
I love the sound of that.
I've heard that in the legal pad. That was also good. Do you think
you had me at legal pad? Yes.
Kind of reading between the lines and what you said, Tom, about the posting process. And I don't know if this is a misconception to me, but it just seems like the last couple of years with Ohtani, with Yamamoto, with Imanaga, now this year with Sasaki, Sugano. Is there a shift? Because this could be more fantasy relevant now. And in the forecaster this year, you've got five guys listed as immediate help for 2025. Yeah. For me, that seems more than we've had in the past. Is there a shift now to where we need to, even as redraft players, pay more attention to this? Is there kind of a trend of these players wanting to kind of move over and post and have more power in that leverage in that posting process?
I keep thinking the floodgates are going to open one day, because I honestly believe there are probably 15 or 20 position players who could easily play in the major leagues. Okay. I think there are probably 20, 25 pitchers who could not only play, but be, you know, impactful in one way or another. There are a lot of good players. Obviously, they beat us in the World Baseball Classic.
Yep.
They dominate those international tournaments. One reason is they're serious. Another reason is that they're good. I keep thinking that, and it's always 3-4-5, 3-4-5. So I hope so. I can tell you the young good players are fed up with this system. They don't have much of a players union over there. In fact, it's probably a players union in name only. They've had a grand total of one strike that lasted one day, and then they issued an apology. But I think the younger players are fed up, and there's a lot more pressure for players to come over. I hope so, Ryan. There's some wonderful players over there. I'd love to see them over here.
All right, let's talk about some of those players we might have an impact for this year, Tom. And we know the big name is Roky Sasaki that everyone's talking about. You know, he wants to play in a small town, apparently. We'll see. Like, I get it. And then, you know, people are clowning on it, but in reality, I know L.A. is not small when Shohei went to the Angels, but again, reality, the Angels are small compared to the other options that were available for Shohei. So maybe there's something to it. There really is. We'll see. But what should we be kind of hoping for, expecting with Roky Sasaki? Because his ADP is already going crazy. The hype train's ridiculous. And the kid's good. Like, I say kid because we're older and they're kids. But, he's supposed to be great. What have you seen? What should we expect from him?
Man, I'll tell you, I've been trying to put the brakes on that train for the last, month. That I've seen him right now. I went the last 3 weeks ADP. His ADP is around 70, 65 to 70. Which is, what's that, fourth round?
Yeah.
I've seen him go in the second round in some drafts, I've heard, and third round. And that's an awful lot to ask of a 23-year-old kid who's never completed a full season. He's had 400 innings pitched in 4 years. Now, again, I'm not a math major. But look, I think even I could do that math. He's averaging around 100 innings a season. The last three seasons, he's at 129, 99, and 111. So he's 23, going to come to a new country, new language, against the best hitters in the world. So I know I'm in a redraft league, I'm not going to have a single share. Because there's going to be not only one, but probably 11 guys who are going to take him before I do. But then I come back to this. Somebody said, well, what's your best comp on him? My best comp on him is Paul Skenes.
Ooh, that's pretty good.
Young, tall, super fastball. So could he? Yeah, he could. It could happen. I mean, the guy consistently, he doesn't touch 100. He's had instances where he's pitched 100 miles an hour, 4, 5, 6 pitches in a row. He's the guy who a couple of years ago almost had two complete games in a row. He almost pitched two complete games start no hitters.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Two no hitters in a row. The only reason he didn't was his coach pulled him in the eighth inning because it was a close game. Now, imagine doing that over here.
Yeah,
his coach pulled him. It ain't going to fly. Yeah. But the guy is absolutely a generational talent. I think he's going to struggle. Ryan, did you write the box on him?
I did, and I quickly went to you for your counsel on such box.
No wonder it was brilliant. That answers that question. That was probably your best box.
Yeah, I know.
That's probably your best box.
I'd agree. Appreciate
and you got him there. At $12. And here's what that really means. He's going to be worth anywhere from $5 to $25. I don't know if it's going to be an in-between, but it could be. Mm-hmm. I love the guy. Long term, I think he is Paul Skeens. I'm a little bit worried about him this year. In fact, I'll give you a bold prediction. Sasaki will be only the fourth best Japanese pitcher in the major leagues today and this coming season.
Okay.
So write that
behind,
down.
Behind Yamamoto, but behind the other three that are in there already.
Yeah. I'm going to say Imanaga.
Yep.
And then from a sentimental only viewpoint, I think Sugano is going to.
That's where I was going to go next. So this time last year, all the talk was about Yamamoto and Imanaga was going. I remember, Bubba, correct me if I'm wrong. Like Yamamoto was like a third, fourth round pick in 15 teamers. Whereas
by the end of draft season, I was all over. In fact, he got paid $15 million. A whole different story is ridiculous, but continue.
And Imanaga, kind of the older guy, didn't have the ceiling as a Yamamoto. Maybe was going ninth, tenth round, and sure enough, Imanaga had the better season.
Yeah,
that's where I was going to go with the Sugano question. Do you see history repeating itself with Sugano over Sasaki? Perhaps
you
this
know,
year?
He's a sentimental favorite of mine. He's one I've been following a long time. When Senga was over there, the question was whether or not, you know, who was better, Senga or Sugano. And the consensus was Sugano was probably a little bit better than Senga. So if you could see what Senga's done, and then Imanaga was not a distant third, but a clear third to those two guys. The problem with Sugano is that he's 35, but he's coming off his best season. I won't say the guy's got 97 pitches, but man, you know, a lot of these Japanese pitchers have a 4 or 5 pitch arsenal. His fastball is pretty much gone, but he still has 4 or 5 great pitches, two of them probably close to elite. If you think Imanaga, you know, Imanaga's nickname was a throwing philosopher. Mm-hmm. You know, he did it all on brains. Sugano's the same way. Sugano's a very smart, experienced pitcher. I think I'm letting my sentiment get in the way. The baseball forecaster has him pegged at $10 for value. I think he could be this year's Imanaga.
Wow.
I would be very – if he was my fifth pitcher, my fifth starting pitcher in a 15-man league, I would be very happy.
That's good to
very
hear.
Very happy, fourth or fifth.
I got one more player to ask you about here, and we're going to shift to the KBO for this one. And Well, like Hyesung Kim, I've done a little dive. I'm no East Asia expert here, but seems like a decent batting average, OBP guy, speed, power. We'll see. But what are your thoughts on Kim coming over? There's some expectations that he should be a automatic starting second baseman or somewhere else. What are you thinking for fantasy?
I love him. Usually, these Korean players take a little bit longer. The Korean League is not anywhere near as deep or as good as the Japanese League. His former teammate, Hwasung Kim from San Diego, and I think he's a free agent right now. He had a pretty bad first year. He didn't have a good first year at all. It was really wasn't until second and then his third year that he really took off. I like Hwasung, and it's H-Y-E-S-E-O-N-G. Kim. I love him. because he's a really, his defense is outstanding. He's the only one in Korea to ever win an equivalent of the Golden Glove at both second and short. So his defense, I think, is going to keep him in the game. Got a ton of speed. Got a great batting eye. I don't think you're going to get any power out of him. But I really like it. It depends on where he lands. Could be a utility man. Could be a starter. But I mean, he is an afterthought right now. I don't even know what his ADP is. I wish I'd looked it up, but I mean, he is a complete afterthought in these early drafts. Now, he hadn't signed yet, and neither has Sugano. And that's keeping their price down. As soon as those two guys sign, they're going to go up in value. So now's the time to jump on both of them.
That's what I was going to ask. Is there a very good chance that they both sign, Sugano and Kim?
You know, remember, Sugano tried to come over to – Sugano had free agency 2 years ago. And
I did not know that.
Yeah, Sugano came over, had an opportunity to come over 2 years ago, and he was posted. Or he was, you know, he announced he would like to sign, and nobody signed him. And that has completely baffled me. But that was a very odd year where free agents weren't making a lot of money. And I think a lot of teams regretted not signing him. But he did not get a good offer. And so he went back to Japan, got a pretty decent offer, had a decent year. And then last year, he had an outstanding year. At age 34, he probably had his best season ever. And again, he doesn't depend on power. So that's why I've got some hope for Sugano. But he's going way late in these. I don't even know what his. I'm not even sure where he is right now. He's way down there, though.
I gotcha. And
Kim is also way down there right now. Both of them are great choices. But if you pick those guys up in the, you know, after the 12th or 15th round, I mean, I think you've got a steal. I think, Ryan, I'm still going to say 90 to 95% that both of them are going to sign with an MLB. Okay.
Yeah, Sugano's 363, Kim's 544 right now.
Oh, they're free.
Yeah.
They're free. So,
for those not on the video, Tom just basically collapsed and shook his head at that. Those cheap prices.
Oh, man. I mean, it's, you know, they're going to give you a, what was it, Moneyball? They're going to give you an out. They're going to take it. They're going to give you an out. Take it. Well, we're going to just give you these two players. Take them. Take them.
All right, real quick before we let you go, just one name out for Keeper Dynasty that you came across in this year's book. Just one name for Keeper folks to keep an eye on for 2026 or beyond. All right.
Well, there's only one name for a Keeper League where you've got those precious reserve slots, and that's Minnetaka Murakami, Murakami. Murakami, there you go.
I just pulled up his write-up for those watching. Yeah. You can read the write-up. Go ahead.
This is the guy you want in your Keeper League. This is the guy that won the Triple Crown 2 years ago with 56 home runs, a record over there. And he's kind of come down to earth a little bit. I don't think his batting average is that good, but his OBP is great and has held up. This might be, you know, as close as we're going to get to Babe Ruth. I think he's going to be a pretty solid player. And he in his contract, it has been announced, he will be posted after this coming season. For you Keepers, this is the guy you want. Now,
that
is going.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that's the Keeper guy. For you Dynasty guys, I like Hiroto Takahashi, who I think is probably the next great pitcher in Japan. And it's Takahashi. And I love him. And then there's a guy in Korea I want you all to keep an eye on. He just missed 40-40. He just missed going 40-40. And he's only, what is he, 20 years old.
Jeez.
He's 20 years old. He almost went 40-40. Do-Yong Kim, D-O-Y-E-O-N-G, last name Kim. And if you're in a Keeper League, or Dynasty League, excuse me, you grab those two guys right now. Grab those guys right now.
And for those of you who have the book, page 235 is where Tom's section begins. Kim is written up on page 235. Yes. Everyone else that we have talked about today is written up on page 236. And again, you've got a little conclusion there that I really like, Tom, at the end of each section each year of immediate help, keeper dynasty, and long-term dynasty, like just which names to know. So that's super, super helpful. Dude, we could have you on for like 2 hours talking about this stuff.
I'm retired. Absolutely. I got nothing else to do. So. Yeah.
We'll be in touch.
Have a couple of us on who's been at it a while, and we'll be like Abe Simpson, and we'll regale you with our tales of what it used to be like back in the day when we wore onions on our belt, which was the style at the time.
I told Ryan, I was texting him, I said, I just want to get a glass of whiskey in here and talk to you about these players for a while. It sounds like a good time.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Yeah, there's a lot of fun. I really have a lot of respect for that league and a lot of respect for these players. They're really something. They're very enjoyable to follow.
Well, we appreciate you joining us, Tom. And again, we'll be in touch. We'll chat again sometime. But if you guys are new to Tom here, make sure you check him out on the old Twitter there at Baseball Stringer. And Tom, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, guys. See you later. Bye now.
All right, Ryan, that was a blast. We talk, we're not dynasty people to begin with. We're not prospect people. And then we both also admit we have zero clue what's going on in Asia. Like, no clue. So to have him come on with that wealth of knowledge that we just tapped, like, we didn't even get into it. That was fun. That was good stuff.
And several takeaways. The Sagano yes. over Sasaki takeaway was pretty huge. I think the other thing, just what Tom was talking about with the posting process, I know we're mostly redraft players, but for those of you in Keeper Dynasty, I think that if I have one nugget to take away from that conversation, is it sounds like this is trending towards more and more. I think he said like 15 hitters he thinks could play in MLB and 20-25 pitchers. That's pretty astounding that he thinks are good enough to play in Major League Baseball. So as that trend continues of those players coming over, it just feels like every year we're going to have more and more of those guys. So it's exciting, man.
Well, it's like you mentioned, the one for next year, the corner infielder with all the power in the world. I've even seen his name mentioned because, like Tom was mentioning, they're getting ahead of it now. They say a year early, like, we knew about Sasaki, we knew about some of these guys because it is a thing. Like you said, it's way more common. Get ready for it. And I'm curious if more start to do the college route, like the future Bambino did, Babe Ruth, because it's interesting. But then again, he misses out on some cash early type thing. There's a lot of things in play, but another show for another day. Let's get to our third guest on this really fun show, Ryan. He joined us last year. He was a lot of fun chatting with here. I believe you've worked with him for a while. He was your editor. There was a story here. I can't remember completely, but there's background between you two. But we'll get to him here. You can find him on Twitter and Blue Sky at BPCruz. Brandon, thanks for joining us once again.
Great to be here.
Yeah, the backstory is so Brandon was on with us last year, but Brandon was my editor when we first started, or when I first started, and then you ushered me on my way. Now we both have our names on the front of the book, which is really cool. So thanks for joining us again, Brandon. Yeah. You sound great, so no worries there.
Okay. We're good.
We before we even start, again, didn't put this on the outline, but I'm feeling spicy.
Oh, no.
We had your guy Olson. We had your guy Olson on the beginning of the show. I don't know if he's still hanging out backstage or not.
He said
give us the dirt. What what's it really look like to work with Chris Olson?
Honestly, I mean, the pages when they come in are excellent. His first drafts are like 98% of the way there. Maybe I make like a suggestion on a sentence or two, or I like point out like one bit of analysis that needs a tiny adjustment, but that's it. I mean, his at this point, he's been doing it for so long, his pages are practically there.
Editor's dream.
Yes. Now he's a very busy guy, and so his pages do come in at the last minute. That's the only thing, is like we're kind of like, you know, looking at our watch a little bit, getting a little nervous, but because they come in such great shape, it really, it's fine, you know?
Yeah.
That's, they're able to move up the chain very quickly. And that, the Bryce Wilson one was, I mean, I opened up that that file and got down to that box, and my jaw just dropped. I mean, you knew, you recognize immediately what he's going for,
yep.
But then to see him actually pull it off and work in some analysis as you're reading along, that's what makes it so fantastic.
I instantly had the beat in my head going off in the background. I was like,
yep, he nailed that one. That's beautiful. That's fun stuff. And even Chris says in the chat here that you actually pumped up the volume on Bryce Wilson. So that was your tweak to that one. So that's pretty fun as well.
Yes, I think I said to put put stop in all caps. I was gonna
say there's an all caps. Yeah.
Which makes sense because it makes everyone stop. It emphasizes it. Yeah.
And just to make it very clear from the beginning for every reader what he's referencing.
No, makes total sense. All right. For those that maybe didn't listen last year, let's just have a quick recap here, Brandon. How long have you been going on the Forecaster, and what other writing are you doing or have you been doing for HQ?
Yeah, so I broke out my advanced math skills and counted up books. This is my 16th Forecaster as a writer and my 12th as an editor. And then I also write the First Impressions column, which is kind of a spinoff of Facts Flukes that focuses on rookie performance, in-season rookie performance. And then I also do the occasional Facts and Flukes column. And like Bubba, I fill in over at Daily Matchups as well.
Yep, lots of fun over there,
yeah,
for sure. So yeah, you're a busy man over there in the HQ world.
Yes.
All right. So we with jokes aside, with Olson, he a very veteran writer, like you said, the pages like 99% of the time are just good to go.
Yep.
What I want to dive in with you on to kind of keep this fresh from what we had last year is you had a first year writer come on to the team, the baseball forecaster writing team. And as listeners know, kind of like I said earlier, this is my, like, I don't know, 10th year, whatever, writing on the forecaster. I'm still one of the new guys. It doesn't happen that often. And I know when I started and I was new, I was like, holy crap, I'm writing in Chandler's book. And like, I'm freaking intimidated as hell. And I've got this editor here. What was it like working with a first timer? I'll just kind of start with that. Like, what does that process look like? Like, how did that go?
Yeah. So the first timer we're talking about was Zach Larson. And, what we do with, potential forecaster writers is, in late September, we have them go through like what we call a trial exercise, which is basically, we just give them like, you know, four hitters, four pitchers from last year's book, and have them do the analysis, write up a box for those players. It's a little tricky because we're asking them to analyze the season before while you're at the end of the current season. And so we're saying you have to ignore what's going on in the current season and do the analysis based on where things were at that time. But that gives us a chance to kind of see, can this person do the analysis, and can they kind of capture that forecaster style and voice in the writing? And it also, for them, I think, gives them just a little practice on doing it before we go live. So I think that really helps a lot. And I think when you did it, Ryan, you were just thrown in without anything like that, correct?
I don't remember. Year? Yeah, we'll go with that. I think so. Remember. I don't know. I feel like I remember doing it might have been like an application. I don't know. I don't remember. Yeah. I was somewhat thrown in there, but yeah.
But yeah, Zach did great. I mean, he caught on very quickly, asked a lot of good questions, which is always helpful. You know, 'cause we have so many, Ryan can vouch for this, the guidelines every year for writing the forecaster, it's like a 5-page document. Right. There's a lot of stuff in there to absorb and remember. We have a style guide as well. So it's good to ask questions to remind yourself, what are the things I need to remember, but also sometimes just to ask, why is this rule in place? What are you guys aiming for with this? And so he asked some of those questions as well.
It is almost a totally different mode of writing for me, where both you guys, we write articles on HQ, but the forecaster is just, because it is so condensed. It's all, and you are kind of, again, that goal is to what Chris was talking about earlier, is to have that kind of one voice, that forecaster voice. It is it's a totally different mindset when I'm writing these things, as opposed to when I'm writing like one of my, you know, weekly articles at HQ.
Yeah. It's so tight. You really have to kind of zoom in on most important aspects and cut anything that is, you know, superfluous. I don't know if you find, if this happens for you, Ryan, but sometimes I'll, my first draft will be longer and then I'll, it's easier to go in and find little things to cut.
To cut. Yeah.
Yeah.
Always easier, I think, to trim or even just use shorter words or there's all these tricks out there that,
We cut a lot of, uses of an and the whenever we can, just little shortcuts like that.
And he, any kind of pronoun or anything, any kind of word that is filler. I try and instantly cut. What would you say? Like, so since we've, you kind of mentioned writing for the forecaster is a blend, especially if you're a new writer, if you're bringing someone on, I think this is relevant to just people listening who want to be writers. Mm-hmm. There's a blend of the data analysis piece, but then there's also that writing flow and forecaster voice.
Yes.
Which one, in your opinion, is more like, if you had to pick one, which one is more like teachable versus more like, which one would you rather kind of see or are you looking for in a potential new writer?
I think writing in the forecaster voice and that style is the harder of the two.
Okay.
It's very specific. It's kind of, I mean, it's a little snarky at times, always informative. One thing I said to Zach was like, there's a bit of like, kind of a tone of confidence to it. Like you're presenting yourself in an authoritative voice with each player. Even though I think I said this last year, if you gave, you know, every one of the writers Aaron Judge's box, you might get 15 different versions of that commentary. So the analysis might be slightly different, but we're trying to get more uniformity with the forecaster voice, and that's a little tougher.
I would agree with that. I think the forecaster, getting that forecaster voice is more of like an art than kind of just something you learn. I feel like it's easier to teach someone, oh, you know, XPX is major league only stats, you know, it's, just as an example, for like, you can kind of teach the analysis part. That voice is, it's tough.
Yeah. And I think it's just, like you said, it's a matter of doing it. I think the more you do it, it kind of comes a little bit easier. I think that just thinking back to when you started, Ryan, I mean, I think by the end of that first year, I know you were definitely getting the hang of it. And then by year two and three, when you were writing with me, it's like the amount of feedback I sent went from this level to just down to, you know, just a couple of notes on a few players.
Every editing pass was like a reverse Christmas present. I was like afraid to open it. And then I'd click it. I'd see, how long is that scroll bar? Is it like long as hell or is it short? You want it short. That means fewer changes.
And this is actually very, very interesting to me, listening to you guys talk about this. And that's one thing I love about these shows is hearing everyone's, because I've told Ryan from the get-go, the box is, like I said earlier in the show, the box has just kind of mesmerized me how you can fit this in. Like Ryan said, we all do writing. And, you know, Brandon, like when we do daily matchups, that's nothing close to what these boxes are. Like there's so many aspects. Like I've helped with other books. We've all read other books. And like one thing I've heard you guys mention here, you know, with Chris, it was kind of like, it doesn't matter who writes the boxes, it all flows. There's like one unanimous voice kind of where like in the book I'm a part of. And then like I said, other books, each whatever segment is that person's voice. So as you're transitioning through the books, it's like kind of a, you know, a hodgepodge of everything more often than not. So it's really, really goes to say a lot. Like you said, there's like almost basically an application process to get in to these things. And that's not just for the forecaster. That's almost anything at HQ. I've had the right stuff to get into other aspects of stuff. It's how it goes, because it's one thing I've talked to Ryan about many times off air. It's been a luxury I've had to be able to bounce it off of him, is how do I find the HQ voice behind what I'm trying to write here? Cause like, I know what I'm trying to say up here, but to incorporate it to the HQ voice is something that takes practice and time. And like you mentioned with Ryan, you know, year one, there was one voice, but you could see it by year three. It's like, just go do your thing. Like you're good. It's kind of, I've gotten obviously much more comfortable as time goes on, but I've bounced it off people. It's just very interesting that people, I wanted to emphasize the behind the scenes that you guys are just talking about here, that from someone that's kind of new to it and then maybe that hasn't been a part of it, there's a massive process that goes on at HQ that, no offense to other places, I don't see many other places doing, is what I'm trying to get at. So there's a point to make it kind of very, very in tune and good, is what I was trying to get at there. All right, let's have some fun now. More fun. Let's switch over to some player analysis here. And this year, Brandon, let's talk about your favorite box. And this name, I can't wait to hear why this is your favorite.
Yeah, this
box.
Name, like, how this, could this be a favorite outstanding box?
Because I'm not going to say the name out loud. I'll let you say it, but I am really looking forward to this.
No, there's not. I don't think you're going to. Anybody you ask about Nicky Lopez is not going to say that he's their favorite anything.
So I was like, this is going to be good.
Unless, like, his parents, maybe, favorite kid.
maybe.
Yeah, yeah, maybe not.
Yeah. He was a Chicago White Sox, so it's going to be tough.
I was looking at his box. I was looking at Lopez's box and how, you know, he's done nothing since that $25 season in 2021. And was just kind of, as I was, you know, starting to work on it, thinking like, man, how many people have wasted a roster spot chasing a repeat of that fluky season over the last 3 years? And so that kind of sparked an idea and got me thinking about it. And so I decided to roll with that. And I wrote it kind of in the style of like a cheesy TV law firm commercial. And I'll just read it, kind of doing my best version of that sort of thing. Have you been the victim of a Nicky Lopez bait and switch? Did you pay too much for a guy who hasn't earned double digit value in 3 years? Call 1-800-ROTO-LAW. Since 2021, thousands of fantasy managers have been duped by his fluky batting average and declining stolen bases. You deserve compensation. And then this is where a little, like, one of those disclaimers, fine print disclaimers would appear, saying compensation is one bottle of Yoo-Hoo. Call now. Let us fight for you.
Outstanding. That's outstanding. So good. That's why at first I didn't read the box. I said it earlier with Chris. I was reading them as we kind of went through the show. So the second I threw it to you, I pulled up the box. I'm like, okay, this is good.
And I want to add one more thing. I out of curiosity, I did go and call that number, 1-800-ROTO-LAW.
Oh no.
And
no.
So it seems very shady. no business name at all. Just an automated menu that says you could be eligible for a free gift.
And
it gave you two choices based on your age. I chose the over 50 because I'm 53. And it said I was eligible for a free medical alert bracelet. And at that point, I hung up because I'm like, this is not going to end well. If I keep going through this menu, I'm going to end up on a list somewhere and just get constant telemarketing calls. So
hey, potential material in 2026 baseball forecaster for an injury prone player.
In case Nicky Lopez steals a base, you'll need this bracelet.
That's awesome. That's a perfect way, because we know Nicky Lopez, and again, these kind of like these bottom of the barrel guys, like, we know Nicky Lopez is who he is, and we know we probably made this point in the last two forecasters that 2021 was an outlier. So it's like, what do you do? I mean, that's a perfect way to connect with readers. Is like, I had a little bit of a different like type of player, but I had the Nick Pivetta box this year, and I kind of took a similar thing, kind of like sympathizing with fantasy players that have had Pivetta on their team before. Were like, Pivetta is a little different because like the skills have been there, but the results haven't been. Whereas like Lopez, it was just never there outside of 2021. But I just feel like as a reader, like, you at least get that kind of chuckle for someone who has been burned by Lopez, Pivetta, whoever before.
I think it's good to have those. It just, it gives a little variety. It gives you, so it breaks up the, you know, if every box was just dry analysis, it'd be a little harder to read. I think when you have that variety, it helps.
Yep. So you kind of previewed this one with us before, kind of chatting about how we'd take the show. Your toughest box, and this kind of goes back and forth with how you were working with Zach Larson as a first timer. So your toughest box wasn't necessarily yours, right? It was Zach's.
No. Okay. So this was one of Zach's, and we went back and forth a couple of times on Paul Sewald. And so we were just trying to get it right. And Zach said he was pretty bullish on Sewald because he's the kind of guy he likes to target for cheap saves. And so his first draft was kind of reflected that bullishness, and I felt was just a little optimistic because the guy's 34, and if you look in his box, he's got declines happening in his expected ERA, his expected WHIP. Strikeout rate is declining, strikeout minus walk rate declining, swinging strike rate. So just a lot of trends heading in the wrong direction for a guy who's in his mid 30s. And so I just said to Zach, I think you need to work in a kind of a note of caution for that. And so he came back with pretty much what's in the box, and his closing line is, could be worth a late flyer. Just don't say we didn't warn you. And so I was just a little nervous about the word warn and whether that was going to be too strong to scare people away from a guy that like still has good skills. They're just not what they once were. And it's tough with these guys. Like, he's not a red light. He's not a green light. He's one of those yellow lights where it's middle ground, and you're trying to find the right, just nail that tone and how to tell people what to do with him. And Zach and I also talked about this. We both overthink these kind of things, so we went back and forth quite a bit on it. But we looped in Brent as well, and he thought that Warren wasn't too strong, so we went with that. But I think he's a guy that the skills are still at an acceptable kind of around just a little over league average level, but those declines should make you cautious.
That, I always find that's one of the tougher times. This has come up with some of my writers as well, where I don't want to say we disagree on a player, but we have different thoughts. And I could be wrong, but I'm just going to suggest it turns into like a negotiation.
Yes.
It's like, how do we kind of want it? Cause both of our points are probably valid. We're all smart people. Yeah. And there's not just one way to take it. I find that's one of the trickier kind of back and forth. I remember, you probably don't remember this. We went back and forth.
I know
it just came into mind. Manny Machado?
Oh, no, no.
No?
When I was thinking of Evan Longoria. Evan Longoria, one year you, I think you were less enthusiastic about some of his power skills. And I said, I think what's there merits a little bit more optimism. Mm-hmm. And so we went with that, and Ron changed it to something.
Oh, no, I do remember that. And then
very close to what you wrote. And I was like, oh, God.
But you were, I totally remember that now. Cause then you emailed me after it came out, and you were like, I forget what exactly you said.
It haunts me to this day. I'll be on my deathbed, and I'll whisper, Evan Longoria.
Longoria 2017, damn it.
Oh, that's great.
That's funny. Oh, man. I forgot about that. But now, I remember that. That's funny.
That's Ryan needs someone to push back though, Brandon. So it's okay. He needs to be, brought back down once in a while. So I fully support your decision, because I've fallen on my face many times with him, but I at least make him work for it. So that's good. Like we asked Chris earlier, when you're working on this process, there'll be players where maybe when you saw their name, you're like, this guy's kind of like, he's not Nicky Lopez, but he's not great. And then you do some work on him, like, wow, this is actually a lot better than I thought. So is there a player that, or players that stood out to you afterwards that you might be a little higher on after you dug in on them?
Yeah. So I did not get, like, when I got a page that had Ramon Laureano on it, I did not go into his box thinking that I'd be slapping an upside 20 home runs on him. He had some good numbers last year. And what I found especially encouraging was his results against right-handed pitchers, kind of held his own in that regard. And he had a higher contact rate versus righties than lefties in the second half. And the PX was nearly equal, which to me made it seem like he could probably still hold down a full-time role if a team decided to give that to him. And because he's a free agent this offseason, I think he's one maybe worth watching where he lands. Like, if he lands with a second division team, where a place where he'd be able to get that full-time job, I think he could be in line for that upside 20 home run and double digit steals as well.
But I'm a Laureano fan. He came up in late season in some of our shows, waiver wire columns, looking at the improvements he made, especially on both. So he used to start out as a platoon player, not so much towards the end. So very enticing. I see you have a pitcher there that I'm very torn on come draft day right now. So
I'm smiling at this one. You'll find out in a sec, Bubba.
So what came from this next one?
Yeah. So, you know, you're gonna find this hard to believe, but the Rays took a pitcher who was bouncing from team to team and turned him into a relief weapon.
Yeah.
Go figure.
Shocker.
So Edwin Uceda, he, you know, prior to this season, played for three different teams, like I said, had some serious control issues, and came to Tampa and turned his walk rate elite. The strikeout rate was incredibly high, very high swinging strike rate. Just looked fantastic. And then in the second half, posted a 1.91 ERA, 0.91 whip, backed by a 2.46 expected ERA, 33% strikeout minus walk rate. Just very elite. Got a brief run as closer over the final weeks where he picked up five saves. So I gave him an upside of 250 ERA and 20 saves. And it's nice when you see a guy that has already gotten a little bit of exposure in that role. It makes it a little easier to kind of project that upside for him. I did look this up. The thing about the Rays is that they have not had a pitcher earn more than 25 saves in a single season since 2017.
Yep.
Wow. I did not know that.
Yeah. Fairbanks gets hurt every year and cracks out about 24 or 25, and then it's someone else's turn. Yeah, it's pretty wild stuff.
So yeah, it's funny that in our current draft and hold that we're in, Bubba, together, you took Fairbanks in the 12th and I took Uceda in the 21st. So I mean, outside, yes, the injury concern with Fairbanks, but there are rumors, reports out there that he's going to get traded. So
okay.
That could be, but I read your, you said a box.
Early drafting fun.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So you convinced me with that box. And then just one thing on Ramon Laureano, and then we'll get to our last question here. You put an upside of 20 home runs and double digit steals, I think, on Laureano. And while you were saying that, I looked up his ADP. It's 539. So it's just like, that's what you want to do. I actually run my first speculator article pretty much every year. This will run in January. I know this is somewhat self-promotion at this point, but I go through the forecaster and I take every single person that had an upside projection in their box and I slap their ADP, their ADP next to it. So I've already made a note to write about Laureano in that box. So,
okay. Yeah.
Good stuff. That's what we got. The guy that you were lower on than you thought after writing his box.
Yeah. So, there's many times where I'll get a box for a player and I'm kind of generally aware of how their season has gone, but maybe I haven't looked at the skills in a while, you know, until I'm getting that box. And so one of those for me was Marcus Stroman. I was aware that he had a bad second half and that he didn't make the ALDS roster, but I hadn't seen how truly awful that second half was. 5.95 ERA, 1.76 WHIP. His xERA for the year was 4.51. But the thing that really concerned me with him was just the strikeout rate dropped to 17% this year, which dragged his strikeout minus walk rate down to 8%. His expected walk rate went up a little bit, and really control has been was a big part of his success in 2021. And so again, older pitcher, you know, some declines that set off a few alarms and raised some red flags. I actually, with him, like, it was so bad and happened so quickly that my thought was a hidden injury, but usually you'll see some kind of update by this point in the offseason, and I haven't seen anything with him.
No.
He's not likely going to be in the Yankees rotation at this point, especially after they just brought in
Fried.
Max Fried. Yeah.
So maybe he's a trade candidate, but looking at his performance this last season and his contract, they're going to have a tough time moving him, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I just took him in our last pick, my last pick in the DC. I don't like him. No, I'm going to preface this. Ryan knows I'm not a Stroman guy. We're like in round 44 or something.
Yeah, anyone with a pulse.
I just want a guy that can potentially get like 10 or 12 starts, and you never know. Maybe he finds mediocrity. I'm cool with that type thing, but I'm with you. I'm concerned about the rotation spot, and then I hear a bunch of rumors out of New York because they paid him too much. So they have to start him. So we'll see. But I am actually hoping he gets traded because at least he'll start probably 20 games and we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Well, I think, and it's safe to say round 44 is not an endorsement.
Yes. No. This is
no. Like, it's for example, I
might not go or Marcus Stroman. Yeah. That's where we're at. Yep,
exactly.
Two picks before, so me and Bubba are two picks apart. I took Lance Lynn.
Yeah.
who could very well retire at this point. So that's where we are in terms of bottom of the barrel.
Those guys both kind of fall into that pitchers with a pulse category.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's lots of fun. Well, Brandon, always a pleasure. I'm glad we got to do this a second year in a row. Hopefully we'll sign you up next year to do it all over again. I love chatting with you. I love you getting the backstories between you and Ryan because it's just fun. Because you know, I've almost done almost 200 episodes with Ryan now. And we talk daily about stuff, so to hear your guys' kind of rapport is a lot of fun for me. And I hope the listeners enjoy the process. But as always, thanks for joining us, man.
Oh, absolutely! It's great to talk baseball when it is ridiculously cold here in Minnesota.
Yeah, as you have your Twins hat on. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Thanks a bunch, man. Appreciate it.
All right. We'll catch you later. All right, Ryan. Well, that'll do it. First episode out of two that we're going to talk baseball forecast. We'll have another one for everybody next Tuesday. But before that, any final thoughts? That was fun. We had Chris Olson, who's been a longtime writer of the book. We had Tom Mulhall, who is just an encyclopedia of Asian baseball knowledge. And then we had Brandon Chris, who comes in. He's been a longtime editor of yours and others, writer of the book, writer of everything at HQ, basically. So got a little bit of it all, which was a lot of fun. So any other thoughts?
Yeah, that was cool. I could talk shop, as you can probably tell, talk shop about the forecast for all day. Hopefully it was just a good for listeners. You get the kind of the writer only perspective from Chris. You get a totally different perspective with the overseas stuff from Tom. And then you get writing and editing with Brandon. So hopefully we kind of covered a good amount of stuff at all angles. And for our next show, we will do even more because we'll have Corbin Young and Ray Murphy on. So more to come on this kind of behind the scenes forecaster look. This was a ton of fun.
Yep, ton of fun as always. And as usual, make sure you follow Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. And I am at BDentric. Until next time, this was Bubba the Bloom, episode 195. Catch y'all later.